My name is Caroline Tivius, and I'm SVP and Director of Sustainable Business at Pandox, and this is my SMAC episode.
Welcome to a new SMAC episode. My name is Florian Montag, and today I'm joined by Caroline Tivius, SVP and Director of Sustainable Business at Pandox. We're exploring how she's transformed Pandox's business practices to be more sustainable, discuss the importance of science-based targets, and why taking small steps is key to big achievements. So get ready for a deep dive about sustainability in the hospitality industry. Enjoy. Caroline, wonderful to have you on the SMAC podcast today. Welcome, first of all.
Thank you.
We just met 2 weeks ago when I was in Stockholm, all about sustainability with the Future Hotel project from Fraunhofer. And you gave an amazing presentation about sustainable business and how also you're driving that topic and at Pandox. And I found it so fascinating that I was like, let's have a SMAC episode directly about it and learn more and discuss it in more detail. You're, as you said, SVP for sustainable business at Pandox. Can you tell us what does sustainable business mean from your perspective or from the Pandox perspective?
Yeah, I can start to just say why my title is not CSO as most of my counterparts. It's really to direct, you know, the focus that it should be integrated with business. Then is when you work with sustainability in a structured way, and it will be integrated in the full company, I would say, in the organization. So for us, it means it should be part of any process we have within the portfolio. If we are refurbishing, we should have a sustainable process there. If we're talking about green loans or refinancing.
I think this is super, super important when we had the chat as well, where you said, yeah, sustainability, it can't be just in silos somewhere around. It's all about integrating. Maybe taking a step back for the listeners who maybe are not so much familiar with Pandox itself. As you mean, I mean, you're a big player in the hospitality space, but not always with your big brand on the door. Who's Pandox and what do you guys do?
Yes, we are one of north of Europe's biggest real estate owner, I would say, with 159 hotel properties, where we manage 20 of them by ourselves or in franchise agreements or management agreements with other operators like Hilton or Radisson, etc. And we are active in 12 markets, so we are quite big, and we are continuing to try to grow. But with focus in north of Europe.
In your presentation 2 weeks ago on sustainable business, you introduced the importance of science-based targets, really as a core measurement to connect sustainability and business. Can you share more about what are science-based targets in general? Is that a industry-specific term? Is this something industry agnostic?
I would say that it's not specific for the real estate industry. It's more really a global view on working with sustainability from a more science-driven perspective. And for me and Pandox that are really focused and data-driven, we believe that it's much better that we align and work structured with sustainability proved by science, rather, because sustainability has historically been something that people have a lot of feelings around, and, you know, rather than it's based on facts. And that also helps us in Pandox to really keep our focus on what to work with. And it helps us streamline and be the North Star for what to prioritize also when it comes to projects. Because it's looking at the biggest emissions in your portfolio or in your company. And that's what you need to tackle. And they divide it in scope 1, 2, and 3. So for us, scope 1 and 2 is our own properties that we operate by ourselves. The 21 that we have full control over, and the scope 3 for us is our tenants and leases. where we don't have the full control because the tenants are operating our operations. So we need to have a dialogue there as well with them. And I think this has been very effective now when we are trying to steer and work towards the targets and having transition plans in place. And this also helps, you know, it's in the same time, it's a lot of legislation coming into force. So it's like a tsunami. And all legislation has the same aim, I would say, to really be aligned with the Paris Agreement. So if you work with science-based targets, you know that you are on the right track also when it comes to the legal purpose. So you can really integrate your own commercial and own vision on what you want to create together with all the requirements, I would say. So I think it's very good to have it as a solid base.
So in other words, science-based targets don't necessarily mean a specific number per se. Only that you need to be very specific on it. And then each company can define their science-based target on their own. Is that correct? Or is there certain norms to be part yes. of the science-based target standard?
Exactly. You really need to fill in their manuals, and then you will come to a number that you need to reduce. Often, I would say for the direct emissions, scope 1-2 is often half, at least you need to half the emissions. For us, it's minus 42% of CO2 emissions. And this you need to put in all the numbers and see where you will end up in reducing. But then it's a very rigorous, I would say, process to really be, you can send in a commitment, then you need to be validated through the Science-Based Target Initiative. That's the organization behind it. And that takes time. It takes approximately 6 months just to get a date where you will be validated. And then it's three teams really going through all the numbers. And even if we had a joint venture and we were really collaborating with the Swedish Environmental Institute and thought that we had everything very solid, rock solid, we needed to do a lot of amendments, adjustments, modifications. So it's a quite tough process. But this is why I also think the companies that have done this process are in a very good position and have the capital market and also other stakeholders can really trust this company to work in a very structured way and have the right target set. Because what I see now, for me, that's also the next step, a little bit about greenwashing. I think companies always try to, not always, but often take the easier way, try to now say they have their own climate targets, you know, they set their own science influence targets, but that's not the same thing, I would say. Mm-hmm. You need to do all the steps to really have done it right.
Yeah, I think, and I want to get to communication to the guests at the later stage, but I think it's so important, as you say, in the world where it's so difficult as a consumer to really differentiate between what's just a nice marketing gimmick in terms of sustainability and what is really impacting our daily lives or something where we say this is really worth it on that side. How do you see, I mean, you mentioned about that in your with the science-based targets, your long-term goal is net zero by 2050. Is that for every company which is part of the science-based targets or kind of confirmed to be a science-based target company? Is it always net zero by 2050 or is this very different based on...
They have two perspectives right now. We have actually not set the net zero. And I know that I have another view here than my... colleagues in the industry, but I think it's so hard just to understand how to meet the targets in the near term that they have. A near term for science-based targets is 2030. But I think it's so important that companies start to get their transition plans and CapEx plans that it mostly evolves in place and really start to take the steps necessary. And feel the sense of urgency with 2030 rather than waiting for 2050. If you are in a company, you are sitting in a board or executive management, maybe you're not even in the company. You don't need to take the very impactful steps.
That's the classic, my the person after me can take care of it.
Exactly.
I will need to rock the boat.
And you don't even know how the market looks like. In 2050, it's such a rapid growth and exponential, growth now when also the demands for these kind of solution comes, but you don't really know how the future look like. So I think it's better really to set, first of all, the near term, have a plan, and then you can start to think about the 2050 rather than starting in the future where you don't even know how it looks. So this is how we work here in Pandox. Mm-hmm. So we will set, of course, but that's more near 2030. We will start to communicate around 2050.
Mm-hmm. And so you just mentioned it, and I can just imagine, of course, ESG is a topic. The last 5-10 years, we all talked about it, but maybe in the last few years, people are actually taking more action and more serious. I mean, Pandox at the same time is of course not a charity. It's not about all looking for pleasure their shareholders and stakeholders. What was the process of bringing ESG into, as you said, part of the business? How was that change management process over the time since you're there or before or after you, to get the company to where it stands today? Can you share some anecdotes or insights on what had to be done to change awareness, to change focus?
Yeah, it has been a very interesting journey, I would say. But it has been like a snowball effect. When it starts rolling, it goes very fast. So I'm very happy where we are today. But when I started, we didn't really work structured at all with the sustainability. We did a report because we were stock listed since 2015. We needed to have that in place. But when I came in, I actually needed to take a step back and started to find a system where we could, structured, get all data in. Since we are data driven, I knew if I need to get it on a higher level and really get it accepted and integrated, I need to have the numbers. I need to talk the language of the executive management group, because at that time when I started, I wasn't part of it. So I interviewed everyone just to understand their language. And I had one in the executive management group that said, I don't care if it's green or black cash flow, as long as it's cash flow. You can get angry if you're a really ESG champion, but I mean, it's more understanding what each person comes from and what's important for them. And also, it was very funny, I think, because I had a very good relationship with the former CEO. And one day we stood in the elevator together, and I asked, how was your day? And he was so happy. He had filled all the hotels with guests, and wonderful day. And then he said, but how do you feel to just be a cost? And I was like, wow. And I had worked like 3 months only at a job. And I said, you really don't know me. Let's meet in 3 months and we will have a discussion. And then I put together with some other brilliant colleagues a green investment program where we really started to look at the low-hanging fruits in our own operations. So it included 12 properties and we wanted to have 8 million euro. And this is then for a company that have never been working with ESG in this kind of way and have these kind of investments. But we had a ROI, return on investment, of over 20%. And I said to the CEO, what was it again? You said you're very, very happy if you have a ROI on 12 or 50, then you are jumping and I'm coming with 20. And I have a risk parameter, so it's even higher. And he said, like, oh, you're lying. This can't be true. These are too good. And we knew that he would start to dig down. And that he could really see and track the numbers. So he said, this is, great. I mean, wow, we need to try this. And we start with the first program. And then COVID hit and everything was locked down. And because of the program, we could really shut down these properties very effective and still have them running. But we did, we didn't need to heat the full property up because we had a few guests and we could heat it up more where they were. And we could start to steer the properties and save a lot of costs, of course. So this program were very efficient and their ROI was even higher than 20%. So we launched a second investment program. And then I was invited to the board, to the executive management group to be part of it, because they really saw how it was actually also integrated and business driven. So I think that was a very good journey for the executive management to do. And I think also, you know, sometimes you have the plan or you know where you're going, but you should never give the full plan to a company that hasn't worked with it before, because this is totally new. Otherwise, they would have perceived me like Greta, you know, some kind of activist coming in and shouting and, you know. But after 2 years, when we had really continued to work structured, I could start to talk about social factors, social impact. And they, I mean, I think it's a really good climate now internally and a full understanding. And some of the persons that were very skeptical at the beginning are really the forefront runners today, and a very good backup of the CEO we have today, Liam, and all the others in the group.
I find it incredible to hear, because as you say, like sometimes you need to cover a bit your agenda and just go step by step before going back to your 2050 story the same. It's like, of course, you can all push it too far or lose people because everybody says these ambitions or these goals are out of proportion. Yes. And I love your approach on saying, first, understand, learn their language.
Yes.
And then see what matters to them. And then step by step, build small POs, proof of concepts or pilots, and really build up via data kind of the getting people on board. I think that is such an important change management lesson, because often, it's always you want to be that kind of shouting from the rooftops, everybody needs to change, etc. But you then often lose them directly, right?
Yes, I think you need to take the steps necessary, but one step at a time. And I also thought it was very fun because just a few months ago, a former board member came up to me and laughed and said, did you know that you would take over the whole sustainability report, because we are fully integrated now? I mean, this is crazy. When you start, it was like 4 pages and now it's 40 or so. And he was really like, wow, did you know that when you started? And I said, yeah, I had some kind of idea, but we took it slowly. We took it in your pace. So now we are here. And they thought it was great because they also had the time to mature, you know, into it. Mm-hmm. And understand why we should work with it, and had some proof along the way that this was the right direction to go with. But I think it's so important also to always base whatever you say with facts, because number talks, and I think that's the best thing to present. Because it's also, you should not forget that the people sitting at the boards and executive management levels are still not raised like millennials or a set generation with having ESG naturally, you know, from the start, understanding that we need to work with this. So I think it's quite, I mean, of course, you need to get them on board as well. And then it's even more important to talk their language. And I think that's much more a challenge and very satisfying when you succeed. It will not, I mean, my role will not look like this in the future. It's like being the internet manager, you know, you don't have that anymore. Everything is integrated. That's the same thing with sustainability. It should be integrated.
So at the moment, you're spearheading this into the business and now trying to bring it into the different teams and departments in that sense, so that nobody takes any decision anymore without thinking about ESG part of their clear strategy.
Exactly. That's the aim. So right now we're focusing on the transaction part, actually, because when we buy hotels, I mean, we do a business case, and the business case also need to take into account if we have a poor performing from an energy perspective property, we need to know, or have oil or gas, we need to know what does it cost to bring it, to transform it into a green property. Otherwise, it will be, you know, I get the properties in and everyone applauds that it was a good deal. And then I need to find the money internally. So it's a very inefficient way of working. So we try to get everything in order from the start.
So that goes back to, as you say, it needs to be integrated in the teams, because your whole due diligence in terms of the transaction team needs to be done very differently than just in a let's say, legacy transaction.
And I think actually, because there are a lot of ESG due diligence forms that are filled in when you do transactions, but I think they lose or they lack the perspective of the business perspective, you know, why we need to do it. You need to have like 5 bullet points or 3 bullet points for that transactions team to really look after. So they understand, okay, oil, gas, wow, red flag. Okay, what does it cost to phase it out? You know, these kind of things that they understand because we have science-based targets. We can't have it, you know.
So
rather than having again, a hundred of points, they don't understand. They don't have the time to understand everything within ESG.
Yeah, I think that's important as well. It's like you're the expert and you bring other people to small steps to get in, because if not, I mean, they're expert in transactions, but they can't know 100% of other topics. Looking at in your presentation, I found it also so fascinating to hear, especially when we look at now properties and transactions and all of that, the difference between the norms in the different countries. I mean, you guys have hotels in the Nordics, in Belgium, in Germany, and in the UK, other countries as well. How do you navigate that, as everybody has different norms, after my understanding? How do you see that even in Europe? Okay, let's say UK is not EU anymore, but even in an area where you say everything should be standardized,
I think that is the biggest, looking like? Yes, it's a very big challenge, I would say, when it comes to the regulatory part, if you start with that perspective from at the start, because it's not standardized, but the EU has the aim to standardize, for example, the energy performance certificates to 2025. And so we hope really that we will see changes here, because today you can't really compare between the countries. In UK, we have most of our B, and just for the listener to understand, it's a scale. You have A to G, where the G is the worst performing from an energy perspective, worse
and
in class.
We know it from our own household.
Yes, exactly.
Devices,
it's the same.
Right?
It's the same. Exactly.
Green, yellow, red kind of.
And most
colors.
Countries have that, but it's then also set from a national perspective, and they are calculating a theoretically primary energy numbers. So you need an expert to calculate it. You need to be certified. So we can't really do these calculations by ourselves. And it's also weighting factors, you know, do you have district heating or gas or etc. In Sweden, we'd have, you know, very high weighting for gas. It's not allowed. We are more for district heating. But in, for example, UK, you can have a B and have gas. And for us in the Nordic, it's like, how is it even possible? Then you would have more G, for example. So we have 12 of our properties have B, and we have most of them in the UK. And that says something, I would say. And in the Nordics, where we have the cleanest energy, we have more D, E, F. And we are, of course, tackling now how should we work with these F, especially classed properties. And we have only existing, I need to say, because otherwise you should have A or B if it's new built.
So it's all about, again, standardization of data and making these reports. It's not just saying, hey, look how great we are in the UK. We're super sustainable just because it's a B in the UK. But actually, it's just the Nordics are already so much stricter and so much further, you would say, on ESG.
Yes, I would say much more stricter. It's much harder to get a better classification in the Nordics. But I think some of my counterparts here in Sweden are quite angry, because we see that the scheme for us will be easier if we should harmonize with also EU. So a property that's a D might have a C with the standardizations from EU.
So you're not saying from a business side, oh, we don't have to do so much, it's easier, but it's actually you're even worried in terms of that your standards are getting lowered because you need to adapt with the rest of Europe in a sense, which are just a couple steps back, and therefore...
I would say that for companies or real estate that only have new built, or focus mm-hmm. on new build. For us that have existing properties, we think this much more fair play mm-hmm. to have a little bit easier in Sweden, because we have the half of our portfolio is outside the Nordics. So we, of course, think this is better, I would say.
And I mean, you're making a great point, right? New built hotels, there's only so much space there. Of course, when we hear pipelines of real estate, there's a crazy amount of new hotels being built in the world. However, the majority in Europe are existing hotels. Because we hear a lot of the nice stories, PR and all of that is, you know, new built hotel, fully tech driven, building automation, full sustainable. But like, where do you see the biggest impact? Is it being even more efficient on new builds, or is it actually bringing these legacy hotels from F to an E or further up? Where do you see the biggest impact for Europe, and where would a real estate owner like yourself put the biggest focus on?
I think it's, from my point of view, I think it's much more important to work with existing properties, because the stock, especially in Europe, I would say, is often in very poor condition, and you really need to work with energy efficiency. But here we also need much more subsidiaries, I think, from the governments as well. We can't do this journey ourselves, and I think this is also why it has been a lot of pushbacks from EU now around different kind of legislations, because it's so much, you know, focus on the companies that we need to solve. And we can't do it ourselves. We can't take all these capex burden, administration burden, because just keeping in line with a regulation coming in. So I think it's a sound pushback that we also need to be more to help. I mean, we can do it, but we also need some subsidiaries from the government to do the full, you know, renovation and energy efficiency measures. And I think here we also come into something interesting, because the problem here also when we're talking about our contracts is that they are written or signed for 15 to 25 years. So if we also want to work now much more proactive with our properties and not in silos, like we have done more previously in the industry, I would say, you know, the tenant is only responsible for operations and we are only looking at the property. You can't do work like that if you want to work with energy efficiency. It's very interlinked. And if you want to also put in much more technical and, you know, more energy efficient installations, the energy benefits, you know, the cost reductions will come to the tenants. So we need to find some solution here where we both gain on doing this, I would say.
So how's the relationship between owner, operator? I mean, it's always the hotel industry, very complicated. Who decides what, especially when you come from the outside to understand. But how's the relationship in your experience between the operators who are in your hotels and you as the real estate owner in terms of ESG decisions? Is everybody going the same direction? Is there off challenges? And if yes, how do you mitigate them and how do you find alignment?
I think this is a start of a new journey, because I think historically it has been more a hate-love relationship between the owner and the tenant. Everyone is, you know, pointing at the other, wanting more. But I think everything is regulated in the contracts. We have like demarcation lists to just follow up to make it more easy, the relationship. But with all the new regulation and requirements from stakeholders, we want to do more. And this is why I think we need to sit down together and maybe also start looking at the contracts and see if they should also be some adjustment. And I think the tenants from our perspectives have come different far. It's very few that are really reaching out to us and wanting to do more projects together. We are trying now to reach out and have different type of projects, everything from a new way of working with bathrooms to reduce the climate impact. But the first, you know, opinion around this was more like, oh, do you want to lower your cost. It was not, you know, they didn't really believe in our aim to really reduce the footprint in within the same cost frame. But I think here it's also, you know, the time will also help because the regulation will also hit the tenants now. And I think then we are sitting in the same boat. And for us, it's so much easier to talk with the tenants that have set science-based targets because then we are trying to tackle problems from different perspectives, but we are trying to push at the same towards the same goal. Mm-hmm. So I think we will see much more green clauses and green leases the coming years. We have signed 3 already, and we start to see that they are more positive in dialogues. But it's still, you know, to really solve, okay, how to mitigate, okay, should we increase the rent for them? If we put in technical installation that lower the cost, how should we really make sure that they will have a cost reduction in energy with volatile prices, etc.? So a long way still to go here, but I'm quite positive here as well that we will reach agreements.
So you're saying back again here, small cases with return on investment, that's the, at the end of the day, data decides it all. Showing that yes, it adds value to them. And at the same time, regulation, the market will not regulate itself on that level. It's, you need the EU, you need the governments,
yes,
at least putting standards up so that people can, yeah, the market will not regulate itself and decide by themselves to become more sustainable. But it's something governments would need to push yes, on that level.
And I think really that CSRD, the very good legislation coming into force now, even if it's pushed 1 year for us, because then the capital market can start to really compare companies with each other, because you need to have the transition plan in place. You need to be aligned with the Paris Agreement. So you can't really greenwash anymore. That's the aim with this legacy, to really have transparency and measurements and data that are audited by a third party, and it will be the auditors. And I think I read somewhere, only the audit service will be around 4 to 8 billion euro in increased for companies now over the coming years with CSRD coming into place. So this will also make the numbers much more accurate. And I think that's also a very big problem, just to have these kind of discussions, because often the data is not in order. It's corrupt. It's the wrong data put in. And if you should start to have link it towards, you know, CapEx investment with big numbers and ask the capital market to really, you know, compare and benchmark and put the money in the companies where they see the biggest benefits and that they are green, you need to have the data in order, I would say. And that's one of the biggest problem, I would say, in the industry.
How do you see the guests, the consumer's perception changing and driving maybe more direct to operators as they're closer with the guests? But in general, how do you see them driving ESG requirements, especially looking at corporates with RFPs or things like that? Do you see that a big impact as well, or mainly regulatory?
I would still say that it's regulatory, because we can see from the bookers' perspective, absolutely, they have corporates that demand that we have some kind of certification, but we can still have a green key, and that's only for operations. We could hide around that, you know, behind that and say, oh, we have a green key, and we don't do BREEAM in use that's covering the full property or size-based. So I think still, if you look at, surveys that Google or Booking.com does, you can really see that everyone says it's super important. I'm choosing, you know, I want a hotel that's sustainable. But when they are sitting and booking and clicking and, you know, booking that trip, they take the lowest price. So, but we are really following it. And I think it's more, they require that, you know, you should work with it, but it's not still the crucial. But I think it will be in the nearest future.
Okay. Interesting that, yeah, I thought so as well. It will be more kind of operational driven in terms of don't clean my room or other, like, not using specific materials in housekeeping, etc. But of course, not at a holistic kind of property at a whole.
And it's hard to understand. I mean, it's quite complex with sustainability, I would say. It's so many angles, and you really need to understand what drives the biggest impacts. And I think we are trying now in communication to invite a guest and see if they, you know, want to be part of it. For one example, we are working with a company called Climato, and we have done menus where we have put, you know, the climate impact for different dishes. And we have started to roll it out in a couple of our properties in own operations to more from a nudging perspective, like, okay, here we make you aware, but you still have the decision in your hands. We don't say, don't shower too much. We don't say, you know, don't have the rooms not cleaned, etc. It's more like, okay, what happens if they have the chance to choose, but they also get the awareness in the same time? Right. So this will be very interesting to follow up. If we see that a beef, for example, is decreasing in a hotel that usually sells a lot of beef, and maybe the more vegetarian dish will be more popular, etc.
It's super interesting, as we had that conversation last week or 2 weeks ago, and it was like, okay, some saying, no, for us, we don't want to intrude in that experience time where you're just experiencing and you don't want that info. So really keen on learning more about your findings there in the future, how this impacts not just what is ordered, but also does it impact share of wallet? Does it impact loyalty in a sense, or repeating guests? Are people giving the same kind of reviews, or are they actually really hesitant? But I think it's all about testing, right? And getting the data, as you said, and sometimes often assumptions can be quite wrong.
Yeah, and it's a lot about also behavioral change. I think that part is very important, and this is something we work very hard with in our own operations. We have been introducing a system because we think that, you know, passion and data should come together. It's not, you know, either of it. And we have this system that we have integrated in the productivity system of the GM, where he sees an index that's made up of six categories, waste, food waste, energy, water, towels and linen, and chemicals. And it's weighted, and they need to be above 8. Otherwise, they won't get 25% of their bonus paid out. And then you can really drill down and see, okay, which department is not working and, you know, reaching their targets within these kind of categories. So it's easier for the GMs now to follow up, to understand the different the ESG factors depending on the departments. Also talking with the technicians around, you know, that can, have he really been following up on his building management system because he sees the drifting or he sees the energy, you know, costs going up. So I think it's a very, very interesting journey we are doing here, also involving head of departments. We have a sustainability coach also at each hotel in own operations to really push for the head of departments to keep focus, and the sustainability manager, you know, having the overall perspective here. So this is also where I think you can really do a big change when we also have activities that we have seen will, you know, push the needle, rather than just focusing on, you know, I think plastic straws is very nice if we phase it out, but you don't follow up on what was the effect. You don't put it in a bigger context. It's, you know, because that's what I always hear, and I'm quite fed up of it, because it's always like, yeah, it's the small steps and it's the small, you know, initiatives are very important. It's just getting started. No, you could have said that 10 years ago. It's not okay. Yeah. What do you read the news? You need to take a little bit, you know, be a little bit faster now come up to pace, I would say.
I think it's as you say, it's you need to then link it directly to business incentives. Yes. It needs to be part of your core strategy. If not, I'm doing in the next company update or something update, you can say I've done this, and it's and everybody's like, oh wow, let's clap here. Wanting to maybe look at also your personal career a little bit, but just on that sustainability topic. So, I mean, you have a business background. You've been driving, working with a lot of big companies as well. Now at Pandox for some time, really burning for the sustainability topic and driving that forward. When have you always been very sustainability driven and specialized in it? Is this something, this passion and seeing impacting businesses and driving business to become more sustainable, has this evolved over time? What's the story behind that?
I would say I have not been a more Greta activist type. So I was actually very surprised when I got a call from Pandox and they wanted me to come and work with them only with sustainability in the role of sustainability, because my previous background is more within communication. If you go farther back, it's more finance and accounting. And when I was communication manager at different stock listed companies, I had the discipline sustainability under me, but that was not really my focus. I would say the time was not right. For me, it's always about business. And I think what drives me is doing things better. I love when people say, we have tried it, it will never work, to get people to grow, the leadership part, and also that I'm curious and really want to push business. So these things are more my drivers, I would say. But when I heard also that Pandox really wanted to integrate it in business, and wanted me to be part because I had the previous knowledge and experience working with executive management groups and board directors, knowing how to link numbers and communication, because that is what it's all about now, I think, to really educate and get people on board. I thought I need to try this. But I was not totally convinced before I started, but now this is shown to be the best job I ever had, actually. I have never been so long at any job. And I think also the perspective that I got children, of course, I want to have a meaningful job. And now I do something that's actually also very, very good for the planet and not only for business and, personal development, but also doing good. I can look my children in the eyes and be proud.
That's wonderful. Way to finish the podcast, as we are unfortunately already at time. But Carolyn, thank you so much for sharing your insights and also sharing more about Pandox and about what the story behind it and giving a view there. It's incredible to see, because you need to be at players to be at the forefront to bring the whole industry to the next level. And I think definitely Pandox, you're one of these players for the hospitality industry. Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at SMAC with us by checking out our website at smac.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.